about, oh gosh, 1998, I think it was, Dr. Jim Hoffmeyer, who at the time was a biblical archaeology and Old Testament scholar at Wheaton College, invited me to go with him to Egypt. I'm a geologist, and he was looking for something that was buried in the ground, and he thought maybe a geologist could be helpful. And so we went over, and this was part, for him, part of a continuing process of scholarship on ancient Egypt as an Egyptologist, in particularly the Ramesside or New Kingdom period of ancient Egyptian history. So that was my introduction to archaeology and then eventually geoarchaeology. And the opportunity arose for us to be involved in an excavation in the Northwest Sinai, which has implications for the Exodus. We're not really intending to, prove any particular locations, but to shed light on the Exodus itinerary from what we can learn from both the geology of the land and the archaeology that's on the ground. So my talk is to focus on some of the questions about the location of the Red Sea crossing. And I'd like to do that by just sort of introducing some of the categories of disagreement and speculation on the Exodus. There's the date of the Exodus question. There are explanations for the plagues. You've probably heard many different explanations for the plagues. Our cable television channels are filled with documentaries that talk about these kinds of things. The location of the Red Sea crossing is often speculated upon. And then, of course, explanations for how the Red Sea parted. And then the location of Mount Sinai. Where is Mount Sinai? Well, these interpretations often appeal to natural, or we might say scientific, explanations that are linked to specific geologic and geographic settings. Even biology sometimes gets drawn into that, particularly for the plague. So there's often attempt to naturalize some of these events that are described in the scriptures. And so I want to look at some of these, but really focus on the Red Sea crossing question today, because we could teach a semester class, I think, on the whole issue. So I'm going to simply look at a map here of, and I don't think my pointer is working very well, but I'll simply look at a map of the Sinai, which is where the area of the world that we're talking about here. Now I've got two buttons to push. That'll be interesting. And these are just some of the Exodus routes that have been proposed through the years. And we can just look at some of the places. Most people agree that they start over here in the Delta and they end over here in Kadesh Barnea. But how do they get there? And there is, of course, the literal Red Sea, someplace in the Gulf of Suez. And then there is the Eastern Delta area, Lake Manzala or the Kantara area, which is south of that. And, of course, there's the Timsa Lake, and the Bitter Lakes are on some of the maps that you see in our Bibles. And then there's the Bardawil Lagoon Barrier Island. That's been suggested as an alternative northern route for the Exodus. And then there are, far away from these areas, are proponents of a crossing in the Gulf of Aqaba, the Strait of Turan, and the area of Nuweiba here in the center part of the Gulf of Aqaba. Well, I just want to look at these, and then I'm going to end up in the Northwest Sinai, where we've been doing our work. Now, we could look at the literal Red Sea, and the problem is that the Red Sea is really a mistranslation of Yam Suf, which is Reed Sea, and it certainly could be in the Red Sea or in the Suez area here, but there really, I've not found a lot of serious scholarship that suggests that it took place here, maybe other than the movie The Ten Commandments. But I'm just going to suggest that's probably not the location of the crossing, and leave it at that. Now there's the northern route, which I think geologists can contribute to this this route, the idea of this route. The scenario, of course, is that Mount Cassius up here in the Bardowil area is associated with Baal Zephon, which is in the Exodus itinerary at Exodus 14. Two, it's related to some kind of cult worship in the sea. The cool thing is that the Israelites would scurry across this narrow barrier island, and then Pharaoh's army would follow and be swept away by a tsunami. And of course, the Santorini eruption has been proposed many times to be involved in many aspects of the Exodus story, whether it's the plagues or some mechanism, a tsunami mechanism for the parting of the waters. But I want to suggest that this is probably not likely for a couple of reasons. Let's look at the geology of the area. This is a rather cartoonish, but it's a map that's based on drilling by the Smithsonian Institute, Dr. Dan Stanley, many years drilling in the Delta region to look at subsurface deposits and reconstruct the history, sometimes using carbon-14 dating, of course. What we see from the cores in the Delta region is that this area didn't even exist, and that that lagoon and barrier island system probably didn't even exist in the Bronze Age. In fact, the Plusiak Nile was bringing sediment into this area now that is a delta plain or a big mud flat, plain of Tina, and that in the Bronze Age, the coast was actually south of that area. And also, if we were looking at Google Earth Bronze Age, it would probably be something like this. There's Mount Cassius, and it probably was an elevated area, but Israeli geologists who worked in the Sinai when Israel had the Sinai back in the 70s, were able to show that this connection wasn't established probably until Roman times. So it's unlikely that this was a route. Another problem is the Santorini eruption, and this is also controversial and involves carbon-14 dating. Here's another one of these calibration curves that Ken talked about. The Santorini eruption, the latest carbon-14 dating suggests that it's somewhere between 1600 and 1627 BC. And there are two dates that are often suggested for the Exodus based on interpretations of the Bible, a late date and an early date. And the Santorini eruption precedes both of these by hundreds of years. So my feeling is that northern route tsunami explanation probably isn't viable. Now, we could also go to the Gulf of Aqaba and look at the Strait of Turan in the Nuweiba region. This has been proposed by mostly people who feel that Mount Sinai is in Saudi Arabia, and Jebel Laws is an example of a mountain that's often proposed. And I really don't want to get into that controversy today. I just want to look at this area as a crossing, because it's often suggested that it would be very easy for the Israelites to cross at this point. And this is assuming some kind of shallow platform or shoal for crossing at these two locations. And again, wind or tsunami would be invoked as a mechanism for separating the waters. And there's even the proposal of some kind of volcanic lava bench collapse down here in the Strait of Turan. And I would like to suggest that these assumptions don't really hold. These are screenshots from a National Geographic documentary on the Exodus Revealed, and I was rather shocked that this was the scenario was presented by National Geographic as plausible. Here's a scientist proposing it works in Hawaii, and he's on a lava flow in Hawaii, and it's known that these lava benches can form where the lava flows into the sea. They can collapse, so the idea is the Israelites go across on the bench, and then Pharaoh's army follows, it collapses. And they even have a map showing volcanoes in the area and this idea of lava flowing in this area, but in fact, it's a fiction. Here's the map that the Smithsonian has that you can access on Google Earth, a catalog of active volcanoes over the past 2 million years. And there is no volcanic activity in this area. While we're looking at this map, though, it is interesting. Colin Humphrey is an example of a scientist who has proposed that one of these mountains here could have been Mount Sinai because it's volcanic and you need fire on the mountain, and so therefore Mount Sinai is in Saudi Arabia. Jebel Al-Lawz, which has been suggested as a mountain that could be Mount Sinai, is not a volcano, but in that case the fire would have to be some kind of miraculous phenomena. But if we look at the record of eruption of these mountains, it isn't well documented, but the last eruption of Harat el-Raha, I hope I have that correct, is unknown. And then the two areas that Dr. Humphrey suggests, there's only one documented eruption, which is about 640 AD. Now, maybe some of you have received this email. I was happy to get it one day, which proved that the Red Sea crossing was in the Gulf of Aqaba, and it contained compelling evidence, such as this chariot wheel covered in gold, because that must have been typical, unless this was the chariot wheel of the Pharaoh, I suppose. It looks a lot more like a ship wheel to me, but anyway, You can go through a whole email of supposed evidence for the crossing here at Nuweiba on the way to Jebel Al-Lawz. And it's interesting that they show this wonderful platform that would exist across this delta. But in fact, if we look at the real bathymetry, and this is disturbing about some of the attempts to use science as an apologetic for proving biblical events, that sometimes it's just sadly not conforming to the truth. There's a 900-meter drop here across this strait. Well, it isn't a strait, but in this width of the Gulf of Aqaba. So there is no really easy platform, and it's very steep on this side. Then if we go down to the Strait of Turan, these are screenshots from two documentaries, The Real Mount Sinai and Mountain of Fire, where they say along this land bridge, and the promoters in the film even say they've been out there with scuba gear, and they've been able to verify that if the waters just dropped a few meters, it would be an easy walk from the Sinai to Saudi Arabia. But in fact, if we look at the bathymetry, we have the two passages here, the Enterprise Passage and the Grafton Passage, which in this case is about 250 meters deep, and in this case is about 80 meters deep. Certainly not an easy walk, and difficult to evoke, you know, some kind of wind set down or tsunami to dry this land. Now let's go to the northern area, the Eastern Delta and the Timsah Bitter Lake area, because these are the areas that are more typically on Bible maps in the backs of our Bibles. The scenario, of course, is that this would be more consistent with the Reed Sea translation, some kind of inland shallow lake with lots of reeds around it, a lot of marshy wetland area. And it is a very reasonable location, according to the Numbers 33 itinerary, for the Reed Sea to be between the third and fourth stops along the journey. Now, we can actually take Manzala out of it, because remember the paleogeography is that this lake wouldn't even have existed until probably Roman times. And so we're going to be from Kantara south if the Eastern Delta is the location of the Reed Sea. Just to run through some of the verses here, it's been established that it starts at P. Ramesses. That's what it says in the Bible, and P. Ramesses has been established to be at this location, Kantir in the Eastern Delta. Dr. Hoffmeyer might say a little bit more about that. that says the sons of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Sukkot, about 600,000 men on foot aside from children. Sukkot is down in the Wadi Tumilat. That's very well established, accepted by most scholars. After leaving Sukkot, they encamp near Etam on the edge of the desert. It's likely that they would have extended out or moved out onto the edge of the Wadi Tumilat, where indeed it does become desert. And then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea. There they are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Well, I guess they could have gone north or south, but I would like to tell you a little bit more about the physical geography of this area. This is the area that we've been working in, and Jim can talk more about the archaeological and biblical connections in his presentation. Here's a map that was produced by the Austrian team of archaeologists in this area of Pi Ramesses and Avaris, Hyksos to New Kingdom, Egyptian capitals. And it's a paleogeographic map showing the open sea out here and a lagoon behind the coastline and branches of the Plusiac Nile, which were flowing in this direction, and then a rather large depression with lakes and wetlands called the Bala Lakes. I often refer to it as the Bala Depression because there are not any lakes there now. We started looking at this area and found that it was very useful to use old space photographs from the Cold War. These are declassified spy satellite images now available from the U.S. government. But they were very useful to us because if we use modern satellite imagery, there's a lot of agricultural development in this area. And this gives us an idea of what the ground looked like, certainly 40 years ago, but with evidence for the past. For example, here's the abandoned branch of the Plusiac Nile that existed in Roman times building out to Plusium. This is all gone now on modern satellite imagery. And then down here we see essentially a geological structure, a fault, which we believe controlled the coastline of the Mediterranean throughout the Bronze Age until the Plusiac Nile built this platform out here. Indeed, if all of these archaeological sites are Roman, and there's nothing older than Roman in this area, and then south of the Plusium line here, it's called the Mediterranean coast in the Bronze, we find a mix of Egyptian, Roman, etc. Sites. But what we do see is the coastline with some relic barrier island or dune, barrier dunes, probably an inland lagoon here with a connection, an inlet to the open sea, and a number of Egyptian sites here, which have only been excavated in the past 20 years. The excavation that Jim directed that I was involved in was at Tel Borg. I'll go back. It's at this location. It turns out to be a major military installation in the Egyptian New Kingdom, and he'll tell you more about that. My work was to consider the physical geography of the area, to put these archaeological sites in their restored geographic context. And we utilize the corona images, these spy images. We geo-referenced them because they weren't digital images. They're just negatives that we got from the government. We had to digitize them and then geo-reference them to create a base map using GIS. We use GPS in the field, and we map, for example, these are the agricultural canals, these lines here that are existing today, which allowed us to look at the subsurface stratigraphy down to about 3 meters, because many of these were ditches, essentially, that were dug into the ground. And then we could all plot this and create a map. For example, this is a map showing thin muds which lie upon the basal Pleistocene or older sand. And it's showing the thickness of mud in this paleo lagoon over here, and then scattered mud deposits, which I interpret as either fluvial channels, estuaries, or just wetlands. And here's an example. This little mud puddle here is represented in this photograph here. You can see this mud, which is just pinching out against the sand, thick here and pinching out there. So it would just represent the edge of the zero contour on this map. This allowed us to restore the surface as it looked like about 3,000 years ago, 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. And so we get a cross-section here from out in the open sea to the dune fields of the coast, and then back some lagoonal areas and some of these wetlands here, channels, and then into the paleo lagoon in this area. We did find evidence of some ancient rivers which we believe are related to the Pelusiac Nile. For example, along here, the river may have flowed right into the lagoon at this location, and then we discovered, this was already discovered, but we discovered this channel, which is buried now, hidden. You can almost see the darkness here and some of the vegetation which is following the old channel course. And we were able to trench and take borings to study the stratigraphy and the sedimentology of the channels to indeed identify different environments associated with a water course. For example, looking at the sands, which are very coarse in the channels compared to the windblown dune sand or the basal Pleistocene sand, we were able to then create a paleo environment map. So here's Tel El Borg, here's the coastline, here's another important Egyptian installation at Hebwa, and here's the Pelusiac Nile running down into this Bala Depression. So I want to go there. This is certainly an interesting body of water, which for some might be a candidate for the Sea of Reeds, but also the Bala Depression might be a candidate for the Reed Sea. As you can see, it's been drained. When the Suez Canal was built, kind of go it in here, the Bala Lakes were drained, so they did hold water for a long time. We did surveys and very crude geological drilling in the area for three seasons. We did surveys to show that indeed there could have been substantial water depth in this depression, 6+ meters of water depth just in this shoreline traverse here. Got carbon 14 dates from shells showing the ages of the sediments that we were probing, and also felt that we could follow the trace of the Pelusiac Nile from Tel El Borg down into this area. We found Nile catfish scales, and we got dates that were consistent with Bronze Age. And looking at the channel sands here, their mineralogy, they contain a lot of feldspars, which come from basalts that outcrop along the Nile. And so we believe that this is related to the original Nile. It might be one of the oldest branches of the Nile that hasn't really been described yet. We've just started to present this in literature and at scientific meetings like the Geological Society of America. But I feel confident in tracing it this far. I'd like to do some field work out here. We've done some work with GIS and remote sensing to have the computer tell us where the river course might have been based on topography, and then also to look at some image analysis to see where we might have sediments that would correspond with a channel course, and feel that it's very possible that the Pelusiac Nile entered into the Bala Depression and then flowed from the main trunk of the Nile in the heart of the delta. So it's something we hope to test with some field work next spring. So basically, just to bring us into this northern area, there are some good candidates for bodies of water which could represent the Reed Sea. Now here's a photograph of what it looks like now, and this is a depiction of what it looked like at the actual time of the crossing. So you've seen that before. All right. So rather than have a conclusion slide, I thought this would be a good opportunity to introduce Jim and get him set up. And then while he's getting set up, I could take questions. So, any questions? Thank you.